I'll jump right into it. We're here with Carl Denson. Happy, this is, well, I guess it doesn't matter what day it is. They're going to hear it a little later on, but pleased to have Carl Denson here with us chatting. Carl, how you doing?
Very good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I know a lot of the fans here in Memphis, Tennessee are excited to have you and your entire ensemble with you. This is the Mason Diesel Line Tour. Of course, you know, all of us on these numerous stops throughout the tour should or will know a bit about sort of the history of that name. But what does that tour name mean to you?
You know what? It was kind of just something to do with the tour, Jared. I was really, you know, we do these all the time, so I was just kind of trying to think of a name for the tour. We never really do a completely southern tour, which is, you know, for a long time. So I thought it would be kind of a cool, just to harken back, you know, keep people aware that, you know, people are reading. You got to be reading. You got to know your history. You got to know what's going on. And there's nothing really provocative about it other than the fact that, you know, we need to be doing our reading and know our history.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, of course, we know Mason Dixon, but Mason Diesel stands out to me. I wasn't sure if, you know, there was something in the imagery or something in your story that might connect specifically to fuel and the energy and burning and getting things pumping. Maybe I'm reading too far into it.
Well, no, you know what? People that know me know that my nickname is Diesel, because I'm kind of buffed. You know, I like to say, you know, I'm from the Gorilla Clan. You know, I got that silverback style. So I've been called Diesel my whole life.
Wow.
And, you know, in the hood, that's kind of a normal thing when you're a little buff kid, you know.
Understood.
And so, you know, and I'm trying to keep it buffed as I grow older. And so it's just kind of a way to, for my fans who know me, know that the Diesel comes up from time to time. You know, we did a tour years ago, and we called it the Running with the Diesel Tour. You know, like the Running with the Devil from who is that? Van Halen.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we did the Running with the Diesel Tour. So, you know, the Diesel is part of my moniker.
For sure. Well, you know, first of all, you do look good, brother. Talk Diesel, that worked out for me. I'm trying to get like you. But, you know, sense of place is really important to us, particularly here in Memphis. And, you know, as well traveled as you are, I'm curious if you have any influences here in our local music scene. I mean, of course, we've got Elvis Presley, Al Green, Isaac Hayes, Otis Redding, and on and on and on. I can only imagine that some of those names sparked some joy in your heart. Do any of them in particular stand out to you when you think of Memphis music?
Of course, man. The whole stack, you know, the whole soul catalog, you know, kind of. A lot of it emanates from Memphis, so, and I'm all about that. So I'm also a huge Bart Hayes fan, and I know that Amado Neon is from Memphis.
Yeah.
And his dad was the bass player with the Bart Hayes. So I've got that connection. But yeah, I'm kind of a historian, you know, in terms of trying to know where the music came from. And so, you know, Memphis plays a huge part in American music.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, we just celebrated on stage a couple of nights ago the 60th anniversary of the Bart Hayes. We had a big show and an incredible turnout for that. So,
nice.
We'll make sure to pass along your admiration if it hasn't made it to them
please.
Already.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, speaking of the past and the music here, I know that a lot of this tour, a lot of this ensemble's story and charm comes from the fact that you are able to work with some younger musicians who represent a bit of the future. Can you tell me a bit more about the personnel in the group that you're traveling with?
Yeah, man, it's we're having such a great time right now. We, you know, over the last maybe 4 years, you know, I've been kind of refitting the band, and so I got this great guitar player from San Diego, Ricky Giordano, and he's originally from New York, but he lives in San Diego now, and he was my first the new guy to come in, and you know, Ricky's, I think he's 34, and then we got a new drummer from New Orleans and a trumpet player from New Orleans, Alfred mm-hmm. Jordan on the drums, and Riccio Frugge on trumpet, and then we a bass player from New York, Parker McAllister, mm-hmm. and a great keyboard player from Cincinnati. He lives in L.A. now, Rashawn Murph. And then as of last year, we're almost on a year for her. For my birthday last year, we got a singer, Danielle Barker from Portland. And so, you know, it's a new energy, and they're really, you know, having a great time playing my music, and they were listening to my music before. So it's kind of an honor, you know, just mutual, you've got a little mutual admiration society going in the band of them really, you know, digging my catalog and me really relying on them for ideas and a new way of looking at the catalog. And yeah. And then they're also, you know, putting together a new show and, you know, bringing in new influences. And it's we're just having so much fun, man.
Well, you know, I can only imagine there's sort of, I mean, you mentioned a mutual admiration society, but also a two-way street as far as learning and development and growth. Do you feel yourself growing alongside these young players as they're learning from you?
For sure. I mean, the funniest part of it is, being established as I am, it was, you know, they come in and they've approached the job with a lot of reverence, you know, so that over time, you know, we're in rehearsal and all of a sudden they come up with an idea that's a little bit over my head, or I'm like, oh snap, you know, we're starting to set each other free, and it's really cool, man. Like we've got a couple of things now. Like there's a big bass feature in one tune where you really get to hear Parker take off, and we've got a nice drum feature where you get to hear Alfred take off, and they're like next level, you know. Like it, when we did it, it was like, oh, you guys can do that too. So it's been super fun, just, you know, stretching the boundaries.
Yeah. On a technical note, I mean, so much of your catalog, I can, as you mentioned, I'm sure your fans realize, but I think if you look at someone like Charles Lloyd or Kirk Whalen, which, you know, my reference point is for my neighbors, people who are either from Memphis or have lived here, incredible saxophone work, but also incredible flute work. People may not always realize the connection between two instruments and musicians who play both. On stage and studio in your writing, I mean, how do you balance your talents and proficiency on both instruments when composing and when performing?
You know, especially like Charles Lloyd, he was one of my early heroes, and, you know, along with like Yusuf Lateef and David Fathead Newman and Rahsaan Willard Kirk, the multi-instrumentalist woodwind players, those were my heroes as a kid. So I've always put my time in on the flute to make sure that I can do that. And then, you know, with my other band, the Great Boy All-Stars, this is probably we started that band in 93. And we had a great flute player in the band, Harold Todd, like one of my favorite flute players ever. And then he left the band, you know, after a year. And it kind of put me in a position where I had to really put some energy into the flute, you know, because there was,
on our first record, West Coast Blues, with this great flute work, and so I kind of had some big shoes to fill. So it's really, it's driven me, you know, over the years to really put the time in on flute, and so I'm you know, constantly balancing both of them. I do a lot more saxophone than flute, but I got plans for a kind of a flute-centric Tiny Universe record in the future.
Wonderful, wonderful. I love so much of your work from the Great Boy All-Stars. As a DJ and a kid that grew up skateboarding with those influences, I can't thank you enough for that music as well.
Thanks, Al.
And speaking of genre and sort of the fluidity of it, how do you qualify, quantify, particularly with this particular ensemble of young musicians who I'm sure have grown up sort of ambidextrous? In the, you know, I'm 31. You mentioned one of the players is 34. Digital natives who maybe see the world with less of a influence on radio format or genre. This fluidity between jazz, blues, rock, soul, funk, and hip hop. I mean, it's all there in your repertoire. How do you qualify, quantify the mixture between these styles, or is there no reason really to put any walls up when you think of it?
You know, I'm kind of with the Tiny Universe. You know, over the years, you know, we've been around 25 years now, and over the years there's been you know, points where we call it the Tiny University, because we're always trying to learn more about, you know, I love dance music, you know, and mm-hmm. And dance music for me kind of like, you know, the African connection to black music and black American music, or as my friend Nicholas Payton calls it, BAM. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's really what I'm trying to, the dynamic I'm trying to develop in my band. And mm-hmm. so there's constantly a little bit of homework here and there, you know, mm-hmm. like properly learning how to play a boogaloo and properly learning how to play a bossa nova and realizing that all those things are connected to funk, you know, right. in a certain way, and they're connected to jazz. And the beauty of what's going on now is you got these kids, like I say, you know, like we're in like the fifth or sixth generation of what I call the music school kids, where they go to music school, they might go to Berkeley, they might go to Juilliard, they might go to, you know, Oberlin, but they're learning how to play music correctly, and they're learning how to play jazz from these great instructors, but they got the internet.
Yeah.
You know, so they can go and search and figure out, once they learn how to play properly, they can go and search out what they want to play like, and they become these phenomenal, conduits, you know, to all of the different styles of music out there. And that's kind of what I'm taking advantage of with my band, is being able to hit them to a few things that they didn't know, but mm-hmm. also being able to have a fresh perspective on things that we both know.
Yeah. You know, returning back to, I mean, the title and the theme and this geographical exploration, you know, looking through your Instagram and elsewhere on social media, I think some of the fans in other parts of the country, or even I saw someone from the UK comment, I think they're a little jealous that the South is getting some special attention, or the Southeast rather is getting some special attention. Right. Would there be any more geographically themed mini tours that are in the future potentially?
For sure. Not sure exactly what that's going to be yet, but you know, I'm touring all the time. I'm right now. I'm just trying to get some tracks done so I can start dropping some singles here. We just did a session with I don't know if you're familiar with Frank Moody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those two guys we met on Jam Cruise last year. And my kids got me into them, you know, a few years ago. And mm-hmm. so I was, when I saw that they were going to be on Jam Cruise, I thought to myself, man, I should try to get them to produce a track for me. Because I have this one track called Tonight that was kind of, you know, half inspired by them. So I ran on the boat, you know, we were digging each other's stuff. They saw my set, they dug it, and so just a couple weeks ago, they were doing a tour of the West Coast, and so they played San Diego. I went and saw them in San Diego. They went to San Francisco, and then they flew back for a couple of days, and we worked on Tonight. So we're going to drop that single probably in another few months. And then I'm headed to Texas to work on a track with Sput from Snarky Puppy and Ghost Note.
Yeah.
So you know, we'll be doing lots and lots, you know, of touring and playing, and I'm hoping to get us over to Europe soon.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, you know, not only touring but also constantly creating in the studio, and it sounds like putting your tentacles, stretching your tentacles out in various directions. I mean, between Frank Moody with disco and funk, and as you mentioned, dance music, house, and I'm sure some techno as well. And with Sput, I mean, those guys come with Sput and Mono, and those guys come through town so much, I don't even know what they're doing.
Right.
But I know that it's amazing. So it feels like your head's in a lot of different boxes right now.
It always is, and that's you know, one of my blessings and also a curse, you know, being as eclectic as I am. So right now I'm just, instead of trying to do a whole record, I got an Afrobeat record kind of in the can that I'm going to finish up soon, but in the meantime I got some singles that we're going to get done with the current lineup and get those out, so people can start hearing the new sound that we're dealing with.
Awesome. Well, I'll be on the lookout. I'm always spinning and trying to find new ways to make people dance. So I'm excited to try some new ideas if you're going to take us on a ride.
All right.
Well, one last thing, because I share a wall here with a film director. His office is next door, Craig Brewer, who directed Coming to America, and my all-time favorite movie is the original Coming to America.
Right.
I've seen that you played a role in both films, but I've never been able to read anything about how that came about for you. Tell me about your experience with those films and how the hell you even got involved
The drummer in the band that is in that is Sexual Chocolate, Jeffrey Suttles. We had a band back in the mid late '80s called Push in L.A. And somehow Jeff got the job on the Paramount lot as John Landis, you know, the original director, as his gopher. You know, and so after working for a couple of months, John found out that Jeff had a band, and it turned out they had a scene that needed a band, and so we got written in, and so that's how we did the first one, and then they came and found us for the second one.
Awesome.
Now, well, you tell your boy. Now I got a little beef with him.
Okay, I can deliver that message.
On neither movie do the members of Sexual Chocolate get credit.
All right, so we're gonna have to come running back for part three.
Yeah, we did both those movies. People know who we are, and we didn't get one credit on the reel.
All right, well, we're gonna handle that. We're gonna make sure that we get that figured out.
Yeah, we need to get something rectified here.
All right. Well, I'm your man. I'll be the deputy there.
All right. I appreciate that.
Well, Carl Denson and the Tiny Universe coming to Memphis, Tennessee. We're really excited. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thank you. Talk to you soon.
Be well. All right. Bye-bye.